Welcome to Medical Confessions,
your remedy for serious medicine. I'm Jen.
I'm April.
And I'm Scott. Today we're going to talk about herpes and everything that has to do with herpes. And as a nice little teaser, if you listen, you'll find out that your parents, if you're over the age of, say, 20, your parents probably put you in a room with a bunch of kids at some point when you were younger and made you get herpes.
I'm laughing listening to you say herpes because it's so funny that it's such a disgusting like thing that we all joke about, but the name's kind of cute.
Herpes is a good name.
It sounds like something fun.
Hey, let's all go have herpes.
Doesn't it sound like a toy or like a
good
candy?
But
in all honesty, this is one of those things that I've just never really even concerned myself with. Just it was like, oh, herpes, gross, something really strange, scary, and random that I have nothing to do with. So I've never really given it much thought until this episode. And you sent us a 16-page dissertation on misery. And I have to say, so Scott sends us this medical journal article that April and I, he knew we weren't going to read.
If you were bored, read it.
But I did flip through it a bit, and there was pictures.
Did you see the pictures?
Actually, if you would have known, April, that there were pictures, you probably would have looked at the articles. There were pictures of genital herpes.
Well, some of my own research showed that, too.
Yeah.
When it was sad, because then you got down to the neonates, and you're like, oh, that poor little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not okay.
None of herpes is okay. I'm a turned person. Just for the record, by the time I got done with my homework, I'm freaked out.
And you realize you've had herpes?
Yeah, because my big claim to fame is I've never had herpes.
But you know, turns out you have.
I have. Several types, apparently.
Everyone has.
And I've heard that, and I just kind of thought, well, you know, chicken pox, that doesn't count, right? That's a benign one. But I think I always thought of, like, face herpes, you know, like the cold sores that I was always like, oh, thank goodness, I've never had them. And as much as I've used chapstick and stuff, like, I am a prime candidate. So I was kind of proud of myself. But then I read all this and I'm freaked out.
Do you use other people's chapstick?
No, not typically.
Why would you be a prime
candidate? Because I figured, like, you know, if you're going to contaminate, right? Because you can contaminate from other exposures.
Yeah, if you're using somebody else's chapstick.
Maybe we should start the episode by what is herpes?
Herpes has been around since the hominids and later jumped from ancient chimpanzees to the ancestors of modern humans about 1.6 million years ago. Emperor Tiberius is said to have banned kissing in Rome for a time due to too many people having cold sores. In the 16th century, Romeo and Juliet's blisters or ladies' lips are mentioned. In the 18th century, it was so common among prostitutes, it was called a vocational disease of women. The term herpes simplex appeared in Richard Bolton's A System of Rational and Practical Chirurgy in 1713, where the term herpes malaris and herpes extendus also appeared. Herpes was not found to be a virus until 1940. In the late 1970s, Burroughs Wellcome succeeded in creating a viable antiviral drug. The drawback was that it only affected a few viruses in the herpes family. At the time, these weren't usually considered serious enough to require treatment at all. A disease awareness campaign was organized to alert doctors and patients to the benefits of the new drug. The case was made by marketing genital herpes so that it would acquire the status of an important disease. In America, Burroughs Wellcome sponsored sponsor groups to advise sufferers of the benefits of the new drug. In 1983, pharmaceutical analyst Arnold Schneider told the New York Times, "My guess would be that most pharmaceutical companies have a program for genital herpes. It is quite an enormous effort right now." The Times concluded, "The current herpes epidemic presents a rare opportunity in drug businesses, a potentially booming new market with potentially booming profits." A Vice article states that in 1982, all eyes were on herpes simplex virus. In the previous two decades, the public perceived the benign but irritating virus had transformed from its itchy down there into the scourge of a generation. The New York Times Magazine ran a cover story titled "The New Scarlet Letter," which explored and reinforced the stigma surrounding herpes. Its author, John Leo and Marie Downs, argued that herpes could put an end to the so-called sexual revolutions, which they clearly disdained. In fact, the feature's opening sentence reads, "After chastity slouches off into exile in the 60s, the sexual revolution encounters a little resistance." The story declared herpes as altering sexual rights in America, changing courtships, partners, sending thousands of sufferers spinning into months of depression and self-exile, and delivering a numbing blow to the one-night stand. It emphasized the author's expectation that the herpes counter-revolution may be ushering a reluctant, grudging chastity back into fashion. Herpes is portrayed as a scourge of swingers, prostitutes, and philanderers. It is estimated that 90% of the U.S. adult population has been exposed to herpes or carries herpes, so getting tested is a moot point. Those who are diagnosed often find the news comes with a heavy dose of shame.
I don't know if I'm buying that it was that much of a deterrent or, you know, like a slowdown of the sexual revolution, just because I feel like there was, at that time period, you're also talking about HIV and the clap and crabs and like, should we go? I mean, I'm just like, I don't know that it was that big. I mean.
So one study was done in 1975. It was called The Psychological Effects and Morbidity of STDs. They didn't even include herpes in the study because it was so, everybody knew that everyone has it. So why is this even a big deal? But then acyclovir comes out in the 70s. They put this huge campaign out there of like marketing, you will never be cured of this. So don't get it. You need our drug.
Yeah, it was a huge scare tactic.
Which makes sense, right? You know, because I mean, if I'm a marketer, there's a like you said, there's a huge market for it because everyone has it. So like we can get the entirety of the population to take this drug. It's awesome. Right. Yeah.
There were even like cartoons of women lecturing their husbands about not bringing herpes home, or like women don't get herpes because your first outbreak, your fiance will leave you.
And meanwhile, they were sending their kids in little chickenpox circles.
Well, before we get too far in, what is herpes? Right. What is
So herpes is a virus, right? It's a type of virus. It's kind of unique in that it has four structural layers to it. It's got like a DNA layer, and then there's several other layers around it. There's 100 different types of herpes viruses out there. Only eight, there's more than 100, but around 100-ish out there. Only eight of them are known to infect humans. So the main body of the herpes virus will sit in the nucleus of your cells, usually in the cells in your spinal cord, and then they're just there for life. Once you get it, you have this latency period where it might present itself, it might not. There's a tons of numbers out there that if you get herpes, that a third of people will get it and then never have an outbreak again the rest of their life. They're just a carrier.
And is that across all the main
all of the different types?
Oh, really? So you could have the really nasty genital herpes, only have one major outbreak, and then never have
again.
Wow.
And there is, so it's estimated about 90% of the world population is infected with HSV 1 or 2, but only 68% of the U.S. population has outbreaks or has ever had an outbreak. So there's this percentage of people who are carriers. They're positive for the antibody, so they have the virus. They've just never had it show up, so they didn't even know they had it. Right? Super common all over the place. Anyways, a third of people, they'll get three or more recurrences a year, and a third of people get more than three recurrences a year.
Well, let's talk about the specifics. So the eight that humans get, what are the eight different types?
The two big ones are going to be your herpes simplex 1 and 2. Those are going to be, generally speaking, oral herpes is going to present from HSV-1, and genital herpes will be HSV-2. They're pretty much structurally the same, except for 50% of their genome is different, but everything else is the same about them. But what they've found in newer studies is that about 30% of genital herpes is actually HSV-1, not 2.
Okay, even, so when I was talking about earlier that you could actually give yourself genital herpes, that's what you're talking about then?
Yeah, so you can have oral herpes as HSV-1 or 2, but it's most likely HSV-1.
How disappointing for somebody. Like, oh, man.
Yeah. I was being so careful.
Should have washed my hands.
Well, and it is, right? And vice versa, right? If you have HSV-2 on your genitals, you can give HSV-2 on your lips.
Oh,
you
know? Reverse seems way worse.
Depends on what type of bedroom Olympics you do, right? Like, I mean, everybody's
into their own thing. I was just talking about just general everyday behavior, Scott. I wasn't being, I wasn't being sexual. I just mean, like, general hand washing.
I took it flossing, to a dirty place.
Flossing. Using the restroom.
But yeah, those are the two ones that everybody, usually thinks about is the oral or the genital herpes. But there's varicella zoster. That's a type of herpes virus. Varicella.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. It sounds pretty.
Let me say it. Say it again.
Varicella zoster. So it's actually the same thing, but
like
varicella.
An exchange student.
Is also chickenpox.
Right.
So chickenpox is varicella. So if you've had chickenpox, you have herpes virus, right? So your parents were sitting in a room making you get the herpes. Later on in life, if it presents itself again, it presents itself as zoster, but that's also called shingles. So shingles comes from chickenpox,
gotcha.
As it were. So they just class it.
We have a vaccine now. So
we do have a vaccine for that one.
For both.
So yeah, there is a vaccine for varicella zoster for chickenpox. And there is also a vaccine for what we're going to talk about in a second, the cytomegalovirus type of herpes. So that's the next one. It's herpes of the eye, basically.
Yeah.
There is a vaccine for that.
Now, wait a minute, though. If you get chickenpox, you can get herpes in your eyes. So is it always the same strain, or is it a specific strain to the eye that you just mentioned? Or when I got chickenpox, they were everywhere, between my toes, in my ears, in my eyeballs. Like, they were horrible. Yeah, I was like 16. It was disgusting. It was bad, and I had to go to
the
water ski camp.
The picture I had of you.
No, it was
just
so
amazing.
Bad.
You have a picture?
No, I'm no. In my
April.
Mind.
Oh, April. I was going to say,
April.
We need to see this picture person. And put it up online.
It was so bad, because my mom told me, no, you had it when you were an infant. Your big brothers had it. And then, like, a week or two before water ski camp. Yeah, it was horrible.
So and you went to water ski camp all
like it looked like I had
out?
It looks like I had total body acne when I went to water ski. I was miserable. I didn't even want to go, but my mom's like, I paid $300 for this camp, you're going. But I had chicken pox everywhere. I literally just laid on our couch and was like, aww. I can't move. It was so, and my eyeballs had them all over them.
Gross.
Yeah, so you can get chickenpox in your eyeballs, but it's not the same strain.
Well, so this is generally affects the retina, is where the herpes lands on, so it's a different strain. So the only way you can test for these things is to actually test in a lab. Herpes 1 and 2, you got to swab it, and then they send it off to the lab. Chickenpox is the same way. The one for your eye, they actually have to... They diagnose it by looking at your retina and see the retina changes. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, because nobody wants to stick a needle in your eye and figure
right.
that out. So the next type of herpes is going to be Epstein-Barr virus. Also causes mononucleosis or mono. So if you've had Epstein-Barr or mono, which I would say like over 90% of the U.S. population gets it by age 18, like everyone.
And they just don't know it a lot of times, though,
yeah,
right?
Because
a lot of little kids don't have heavy symptoms.
It's so benign that, and, you know, the older you get, the more pronounced the symptoms are. Like, I had Epstein-Barr in my late 20s. I slept for, like, 16 hours a day. It sucked.
This was, like, 3 years ago. Yeah. And our son got it, and then I got it from him. And he was quasi not feeling well for, like, a week. And I felt like garbage for, like, 3 weeks. And for, like, a full week, I did nothing but lay on the couch and sleep.
I was the same way. Like, I would go to work, and one of our coworkers were like, just go to bed, dude.
Yeah.
Don't even show up
right.
to drill.
I did
Don't
the same
you?
Thing. I still
just
tried to function and went to work and stuff. I took, like, a week off and then tried to go back to work, and I was like, I'm going to die.
Yeah. When I went to the doc, I'm like, dude, I'm sleeping, like, 16 hours a day. What do I got? And he came back. He's like, oh, you got Epstein-Barr. That sucks. It's going to be
luck.
Horrible a couple of months, maybe, so good luck with that. And it lasted about 3 weeks or so. But
yeah.
So, yeah, it's a type of herpes virus. There's also another type, human herpes virus 6. I think they just ran out of names at this point. So
I like
just...
that one, though. It's simple. That, yeah. like, appeals to the masses.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, pronounce this one. This is for the regular people.
Well, yeah, because if you go to your doc and he says you got Epstein-Barr, you're not thinking herpes.
No.
If they say you've got chickenpox, you're not thinking herpes. And
right.
if you got shingles, no one thinks it's herpes.
No,
but
right.
it is. So that one has two different variants, A and B. There's a human herpes virus 7. Again, didn't. Really want to name it much more. And then there's a Kaposi's sarcoma virus, which is also known as herpes virus 8. So those are the 8 types we can get.
And what are 6, 7, and 8? Like, how do they present?
So they classify herpes into 3 main groups, and it's more classified based on how often they, or how long it takes for them to present their symptoms, and then how basically close you have to get to get them. So group 1 is herpes and chickenpox, which is pretty much you got to be touching the person to get them. And then they've got a really fast, I guess, onset of symptoms, if you want to call it that.
Isn't it like up to 14 days with chickenpox?
Well, that's how long they can last, but that's not how quickly the symptoms come on. From like the first time you like, so like if you feel like a little something on your lip and then like within a day you've got the blister, you know, so that's pretty fast.
Okay.
Versus some of the other ones that are slower. So class 2 are going to be herpes virus 6 and 7, the eye one. And actually, excuse me, the chickenpox is type 2, not type 1. And that is, can present with droplets. So if you sneeze on somebody, you're going to get it. So you do have to, you don't have to so be as gross. Close to yeah. get it, you know. And then the group 3 is going to be that human herpes 8. And that one, it takes, I mean, airborne at that point, right? Like yeah. it's, you don't have to be super close to get it. So that's kind of how they class them. But at the end of the day, they're all viruses. And they're really not that big of a deal because, well, unless you get them when you're a kid, or like a neonate anyway.
Right.
But in an adult, you got herpes, who cares? The sore comes out and then it's gone. And then maybe you go the rest of your life and never get it again. Like nobody, it's not really that debilitating like an HIV or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's probably not fair to say unless you've actually had it. And the reason I bring that up is I had a friend that was a coworker, like when I was like 20 years old, and she told me, oh, I was just diagnosed with herpes. And she was devastated. And
one or two.
I didn't ask her anyways. I shut down. Our friendship tanked. But I remember just being like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. And she like told me everything the doctor had told her. And I remember thinking like, yeah, how do you go right. on with life? And she told me it was horrible. She didn't give me any details. But then after doing the research on this, I didn't know that genital herpes, that when you first get it, you maybe it's almost kind of like mono, but you'll get fever, malaise. A lot of times women will have like urinary retention. They'll have a hard time going pee and stuff. And so she was talking about her symptoms. And I was just thinking cold sore type, you know, like right. down there. And I was just like, that sounds horrible. But then reading this, it was like, oh, she was actually probably sick for a while. And then, you know, not to mention the physical presentation, especially the, you know, genital. So I would assume, though, if you begin a disease process and now think the rest of your life you're going to have to worry about that. And then another thing I was reading on that said that a lot of times people that have herpes, and I've heard this with cold sores, people can feel them coming on. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like a tingle or mm-hmm. whatever. I guess genital herpes presents the same way. So they can actually kind of feel like the beginnings. So they can actually have the feelings from what they felt the first time they had an outbreak. So they'll actually know before they're, call it contagious or symptomatic or whatever, they'll have like that same tingle and discomfort.
Well, I would think that was just a bad education by the doc because when you first get them, yeah, you're going to have these symptoms because your immune system's now, you're creating antibodies. And so you get these immune systems like you do if you get the flu or any other virus, right?
Yeah.
But then once you have it and you're just getting the sores, you don't get those same flu-like symptoms every time.
Well,
right?
And I don't know that that's what she was worried about. I think she just is like, I'm a 20 or 21-year-old woman and the rest of my life I have to worry about giving this to people. And
giving
you're
to people, dealing with it, treating it. Yeah, because
right.
I had a friend also who had herpes genital in high school.
Can we just clarify, like, this is legit our friends, not us. We're both like, I had a friend. I promise.
Yeah.
It was
and there was like a huge stigma on it. And then I also was reading that doctors were starting to just pretty much lie to their patients and not tell them what it was or misdiagnose them because of they were having patients commit suicide.
Well, this is the problem. The stigma's out there, but everyone's had it forever. It's
I know.
Not
I think
big
it's
of a
just.
Deal.
I think it's the genital. You know, like that form is probably. It's an STD.
You and start talking about the business, and now that's
right. Well, and
or
like,
even on the face. Like I remember being in junior high, thinking I had a cold sore and crying. And I think the fear stemmed from I had an aunt who would get cold sores, and she'd be like, "Oh, don't kiss me. I have a cold sore." So at a very young age, it was like, "Ooh, I don't want one of those." So I just remember like, "I'm gonna have this forever," and bawling. My mom's like, "You're fine.
Yeah,
get over it." Yeah.
Well, in fact, I read that a lot of times women would have been misdiagnosed. I don't know if it was intentional or not, and be told they had a urinary tract infection or even a yeast infection, when in fact it was herpes.
Well, I'm do you like, think it would make these same people feel better if their doc said, hey, 90% of the world population has this. You're not the only one that's going to be
okay. No, I'm not disagreeing that bedside manner and presentation would have made a huge difference. I'm talking about, you know, the 90s when this is, you know, it was a different time.
Right. And even now, I still don't want them. But, I mean, okay, here's my deal is I don't look at someone and be like, oh, that person's gross, they have herpes. I just
feel bad for them.
I feel bad for them because I understand that it hurts. I don't want to treat them, and I just don't want them in my pictures.
They have Photoshop now, so you're good.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's that big of a deal myself.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because, well, if everybody's got something, why are we worried about it?
Yeah. And I think for most of it, like the mono and the, you know, even the cold sores, and that one just doesn't bother me, but there's something about the genital herpes. And I also read that you are less likely to spread herpes as you age.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So supposedly, and I don't know the science behind it, I probably should have read up more on it, but it was talking about just myths debunked about herpes. And it said that as you get older, you are less likely, it becomes less potent, I guess, maybe over time. And you're less likely to actually have outbreaks, and it almost becomes kind of dormant.
I didn't read a study on like the age of people who have it or don't. I just looked at the overall epidemiology of the different worlds and or the different countries of the world.
We're laughing because you're like, I didn't read a study.
Well, so and I don't want to listen to in their 50s who got it.
No, I don't think it's saying that you couldn't. What it was saying is that did you know that you actually less chance of passing it on as you got old? I was like, great, one good thing about getting old. My skin's wrinkled, my hair is white, but guess what?
You're herpes.
We're good now, hon.
Well, did you guys read on the neonatal herpes infections?
Because
this is the only one that scares the crap out of me, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me.
So herpes, like if, you know, we've talked about a lot of women have HSV2. And so if you have HSV2, you give birth, you can pass it on to your baby. About 3,000 cases of infant herpes are diagnosed every year. 70% of them are caused by HSV2, thinking that usually it's the vaginal deliveries. So they're just passing it on to the kid. When they get it, they classify it into three categories. Do they present with it on their skin, eyes, and mouth? That comes with a 0% mortality rate. Who cares? The rest of us, we're not dying from herpes, right? But the other two classes are encephalitis and disseminated infection.
Brain herpes.
So if you get the brain herpes from, you know, giving birth, you got an overall 15% mortality rate, which sucks.
Yeah.
And if you're a neonate, it's 60% mortality rate. But the problem with that is if you get one of those two, so the disseminated infection is basically herpes is in more than one organ, not just your brain. But of those, only 40% of those kids develop normally.
Oh,
they all grow up with like this. 60% grow up with these developmental disabilities. So the good news is that only occurs one in every 150,000 births. So super rare.
But is that not something that's screened for in prenatal care? Is that not something like...
Well, it is. Your OBGYN is going to ask you, do you have this? If so, they're probably going to put you on some acyclovir or something just before you give birth.
So the mom should know.
Yeah. You would think, but maybe they don't know, right? Because a lot of people won't know because they're not presenting. So how do you know, right? So it's super rare to get it, but if you get it, it's super debilitating. So the neonatal herpes, that's one you got to be worried about.
Do they have to be in an outbreak for them to deliver to pass that or no?
No, you don't have to be in an outbreak, but it's more likely that you're going to pass it on if you are.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you can also have a C-section if you want, but yeah, I mean, that's pretty invasive thing to do because at the end of the day, it's a small percentage of the kids that get this anyway, but you can, right? It's only happens 3,000 times a year annually. There's a lot of kids born
in the U.S.
Year,
or
right? In the U.S.
Hmm. Still a lot of babies.
But most of them are getting the skin, eye, and mouth herpes that everyone else seems to have anyway.
So what's... Is there any treatment for herpes besides, I shouldn't say treatment, there's no cure.
So the good news for you, because you're really weirded out about the...
for you?
Yes.
Herpes. Not
you. Everybody has herpes. It's normal, Jen. Don't worry about it.
There are
Forget that babies are dying and you've got it in your eye and your brain.
And your mono. But there are two vaccines right now for the varicella zoster, so the chickenpox one, and then the one for your eye. There is currently right now antiviral vaccines for herpes type 2, herpes simplex 2.
Hmm.
It's in human trials right now, so they're probably going to come out with that pretty soon.
And that's the scary, gross one. So
yes.
That's good news.
Yeah, see, good news, right?
Yeah.
So there's also a lot of antivirals you can use. The
Way
Ovaer
to keep
class.
The stigma going.
Hey, I am okay with face herpes, but there is something scary about anything that migrates south.
So you can take some antivirals of the Ovaer class, so acyclovir, valacyclovir, or famciclovir. These are some antivirals that are out there, and they're coming out with new ones all the time, so it wouldn't surprise me if there's some more going to come out. But
treatment-wise, how does, like, Valtrex work? When people start, when they take that for herpes, what does it do?
It's an antiviral.
Okay, right.
So it's just like taking an antibiotic for bacterial infection.
Gotcha.
It just helps kill viruses.
So when people have chronic, so they know that they will have outbreaks, they can keep Valtrex on hand. Is that when we were talking about the little like tingling or symptoms of, do they start taking it when that happens? Or do you actually have to present with an outbreak for it to work?
So it's going to be up to your doc and what and how often it presents, right? But usually you're going to be taking them, like if you're getting lots of outbreaks, you know, so if you're getting those three or more outbreaks a year, they're probably going to put you on it. You just take it every day and then you're not going to, you're going to have a less chance of having an outbreak.
Every day.
But you don't have to, right? Like, so you can also take it just when you need it as well. Or, you know, so lots of people have the prescription and they take it sometimes and then they go years without taking it because they don't. I mean, because these latency periods can go years, right? Like people who have, they say, oh, I've got genital herpes, but I haven't had an outbreak in 10 years, right? But you still have it. So
yeah.
So they're not going to be taking that every day. But if you're somebody who gets outbreaks all the time, I would imagine you're probably going to take it all the time just to reduce the amount of outbreaks.
But can't your outbreaks lessen? Like, so the first time is probably the worst, and then maybe you have lots of outbreaks and you don't know it anymore?
The studies say there is no link on how often that they'll come on. There's no known factor that says this is going to make it come on this much. So it's basically who knows, right? Like you can have, the latency periods are unknown and they're person to person. And it's really not known what makes an outbreak occur, but there's lots of anecdotal evidence that says you're more likely to have an outbreak if you, like, get sun exposure or stressed out a lot or you're sick, then you can have an outbreak. Mm-hmm. Seems to be more of a chance, but that's not ever been proven in a study either. So really, it's a who knows. And you can be someone who's got, oh, I had three outbreaks this year, and then go 4 years without an outbreak again.
Well, I have another question for you. So if your partner has herpes, does the partner have to be, so they don't have to have symptoms for you to get herpes from them?
Correct. But it's just more likely that if they have a sore, an active sore, that you'll pass it on.
So I'm going back to when Scott said it's not that big of a deal. So our friends that had herpes, they basically can never have unprotected sex the rest of their life without risking passing it on to a partner.
So here's the question.
To me, that would be pretty devastating.
Right.
What about the 20% of the population who've never had an outbreak, but they have herpes?
Right. But I'm just saying, though, you would be knowingly passing it to somebody.
I would say not, because that risk is pretty low if you don't have an outbreak.
I'd be pretty upset if someone had sex with me and knew they had, like, an outbreak or something.
The right answer is to do the right thing, right? Like, if you have it, say, hey, I've got this. Here's what I know about it. Here's the chances if I don't have an outbreak.
Yeah, and I guess I liken it to HIV. So I know different, I don't know, severity. But still, you knowingly have something. And even if you're in a long-term relationship with somebody that you are going to marry or have married, and you still don't want to give this to them. And
true.
So you will probably always have to use protection.
But percentage-wise says they have it already anyway.
Yeah, but not the really gross, icky kind.
Well, sure. Percentage-wise, that's not true. Percentage-wise, they do.
Yeah. See, I just assumed that they would just use protection when there was a current outbreak going.
That would be my assumption, too, because, like, if there's not an outbreak going, the risk of passing it on is pretty low.
Yeah.
Right? Like, crazy low.
Yeah.
But
I
still can
think,
right?
About how horrible that would be to have like a long-term partner and pretty careful, and then you drink too much one night and now you're just like, how do you not get angry about it? It's not like leaving your shoes in the
Do you get angry when he gives you the cold or the flu?
No, I never get sick.
Well,
I just get three kinds of herpes.
But if he gave you the flu, would you get mad at him?
Yeah, like, but that's not intentional.
It's the same thing. It's like it doesn't affect anything. Like,
I just want you to admit that
there
it would
was
be
a
devastating.
Study done psychologically among patients based on psychological disturbance. HIV was number one, herpes was number two.
Which is crazy to me because...
Oh, yeah. No, it is.
It's
but
not
it's
that
just
big of a deal.
The stigma behind, oh, my God, that person has herpes.
But then... But so does everybody else.
Wow.
Like... trying to debunk this.
We don't disagree with you.
Yeah,
we're just
we
saying this is the general census out there.
This is why we're trying to solve this
problem. I think it would be more devastating. I just think that it's fair to acknowledge to somebody that would be devastating to... contract and have symptoms and outbreaks of genital herpes, because I think that would be pretty... And just to say, don't worry about it, it's fine.
Well, you're not saying don't worry about it, it's fine. What you say is, hey, I've got this. If there's not an outbreak, the chance is pretty low. Chances are you have it too already, but, you know...
This is the conversation. Like, he's already walked through it. If I get this, here's I'm going to sit down with my girlfriend.
Well, what I'm saying...
And it's funny to me because Scott's girlfriend, significant others in the studio, and I'd love to know after we're done filming what her thoughts are.
Well, what I'm saying is that
would you still be with Scott if he told you on date one?
But here's the thing, right?
Like, so let me tell you about this, and everybody has it.
But why would it be devastating, right? Hey, you're every now and then you might get a sore, but maybe like once every 10 years. I'll probably give you the flu more often, and that's going to be way more painful than a herpes sore. Like the flu where you're on the couch for like 2 days and puking, that's way worse.
Okay. I don't think any man or woman would agree that the flu is worse than herpes.
Yeah. I'm talking about the symptoms of the herpes are not, what is it? I mean, it's a little sore.
Okay.
Maybe. Did you not look at the pictures in the article you sent us? That looked horrible.
Well, first, I mean, those are like the extreme cases, right? Like, there's extreme cases of flu that kill you, right?
I also read, though, that even wearing condoms is not necessarily fail-proof.
True.
You know, because, right.
But how can you say, like, what? Because then it's like, I guess we'll never have oral sex if you have herpes of the mouth, because now you can pass it on that way, too. Right?
People and I are like, yeah. True.
I'm trying to keep the show PG right now. Yeah. It's really hard.
We'll agree to disagree on
what
this one.
What I will say is that there shouldn't be a stigma about herpes because it's not going to kill you.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that there should be, and I'm not saying that you would ever discredit, you know, a relationship, you know, because of that. I'm just saying that I think it's reasonable to accept that it would be devastating for somebody and that there is some...
It can be if they... I think it would be devastating if they thought that this was some sort of horrible thing that's going to, like, kill somebody, right? Like... That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's, I'm going to give you a sore every now and then. Sorry if I give you the
just
flu
maybe
and you
baby.
Puke. Well, but if you give somebody the flu, you could kill them, right?
But think about it, though. You know, like, even
about the flu.
Fertility, you know, like being able to have children and worrying about an outbreak.
I just think you guys are perpetuating the stereotype.
Okay. I'll own that
We're
one.
We're just acknowledging it.
And actually, like I said, I actually just want to say that if somebody has it, that make them feel okay with being bothered or upset by it and not being like, you're fine. Don't worry about it.
No, and that's the thing. It's just them educating themselves. But when you get that, when you get, hey, you have herpes, your brain goes all those other places until you realize, oh, it's not that bad.
I can manage this.
Yeah, we can manage. Yeah. There's things that we can do. And then that's when your logic comes in. But right from the initial...
Yeah, if you told me that in high school, I'd have thought, okay, I'm dying, right? Like, this sucks. But I think that's just an education piece that
doctors should also do,
not have sensationalized articles about, like,
and perpetuating and promoting the stigma. That's not great. But I'm just saying that I think it would be really hard to think now any person I'm dating from here on out, at some point in my relationship, I have to have this conversation. And it's going to be, you know, depending on your values and whatever, you know, it's going to be, you know, potentially early. And that just kind of stinks.
Well, and I think, I mean, it's probably true that a lot of people would be devastated, but I think just the uneducation piece is there. And then, like, the, you know, the people we work with, I mean, every one of them, it seems, comes up with a cold sore at least once a year. And they're like, ah, I got herpes on my mouth, you know, and nobody seems to care.
No.
Right? Like, it's not that big of a deal.
So my question is, you keep saying that there's a high percentage that has herpes.
Yes.
Which percentage has genital herpes?
I do have those numbers. Stand
I know,
by.
I knew you would.
Or 90% of the U.S. population has either one or two, and 68% has outbreak. So I don't know the specifics of just two versus one, but 68% has outbreaks, and 90% have one of the other. So 9 out of 10 people have it.
Yeah.
So why is it that big of a deal?
Really?
Yeah, that just seems weird to me because...
Yeah, me too.
That's that high.
So, when you mentioned it in your history thing, they you're in your numbers, there were 95% in that one. In the one
I think
read,
I was just thinking,
was 90
like,
in mine.
I'm just thinking, yeah,
okay,
like,
so 90, so we have the same number.
And I kept thinking chicken pox, or, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm thinking that
I'm like,
type
oh,
of
I have a, it because I've had chicken pox, is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
No, it's one and two. Like, they, like, 9 out of 10 people come up with the antibody.
Well, chicken
for
pox
it.
Is two.
So, what's that?
Chicken pox is two.
Chicken pox is HSV-3, the varicella zoster. HSV-1 is
mouth.
Is mouth generally, and 2 is, is genitals generally. All so right. There we go. That's all about herpes.
All right. Well, if you liked what you saw or heard today, check us out on our YouTube.
Or visit our website, medicalconfessions.com.